Welcome to Good Things Radio, a lifestyle show about activating your mind, body, and soul to become fully alive. And now, your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome. Hello, my name is Brooke Taylor. This is Good Things Radio. Thank you for being a part of the program today. Happy to be with you on this first week of Advent. Here we go. So how is your season going? It's weird with Thanksgiving and then all the online shopping. Okay, just Amazon basically, but so much of the Black Friday stuff starting on Thursday and then the weekend, and then just it is warp speed that the season kicks off. So I'm feeling a little disjointed about that. But you know, I actually loved putting the Advent wreath out even more because it was an opportunity to escape from all that and really just enter into the silence and the simplicity of what the season is about. So we did light that first candle. And as my kids are another year older, taller, you know, it's just a reminder to embrace the sacred seconds of the season, which I know can be tough when there's sickness and financial struggles and grief. But therein, I think, also lies the beauty, because that first candle signifies hope and also prophecy. There's a breakdown of the weeks that I wanted to share before we jump in, which I've blogged about before and you can find, but just quickly, the first Sunday of Advent, that is our first purple candle. That is typically called the prophecy candle in remembrance of the prophets, primarily Isaiah, who foretold the birth of Christ. And we feel that in the liturgy, the foreshadowing and the prophetic theme of the readings. And the candle represents hope or expectation in anticipation of the coming Messiah. And then the second week of Advent, the second purple candle typically represents love. Some traditions call it the Bethlehem candle, symbolizing Christ's manger. On the third Sunday, that's Gaudete Sunday, the rose-colored candle, customarily called the shepherd's candle, and it represents joy. And then the fourth and last purple candle is sometimes called the angel's candle, and that represents peace, and is lit, of course, on the fourth Sunday of Advent when it's oh so close to Christmas Day. And it's kind of fun because we lit that first candle. We started our O Radiant Dawn devotions, which are 5-minute prayers around the Advent wreath from Lisa Hendy. I think I've been talking about this since she first came out with it, maybe 10 years ago. And I know there's another one from Take Up and Read that's also called O Radiant Dawn. Whatever you get, whatever you do, I think it's just about that gathering. In addition to that, we also doused the house with holy water and blessed the manger with holy water, the manger scene. We blessed the Advent wreath. We blessed the Christmas tree. And it was extra special because the holy water was from the Holy Land. So that was kind of a neat thing, too. And now it begins. That walk toward the manger on Christmas Day in this Advent season. I love it so much. Never again. Advent 2019 will we have. So just trying to enjoy those simple moments. Which leads me to my segue here. You know, for parents, grandparents, teachers, anyone in a position of influence over younger children, one of the best, most important gifts that we can give, that we are called to give, is that of wise counsel and godly instruction to the younger generation. So today's show focuses on that. I sit down with clinical psychologist Dr. Ray Guarundi. I'm so excited to finally get him on the program because it's been a few years that we've talked about having him on the show. And we go way back many years, and you'll hear that in the beginning of the interview. But it was so nice just to be able to finally get this accomplished. And he doesn't hold back. We get into everything from dealing with mental health issues, anxiety, bipolar, to smartphones. And how is your authority? Do your children take you seriously when you say something? Dr. Ray has a little anecdotal test, and that will kind of grade your authority level. Really interesting. And also sharing some listener questions that you sent in as well. So let's jump in. Dr. Ray Guarundi is a clinical psychologist, speaker, author, host of the television show EWTN program Living Right with Dr. Ray, husband, father of 10. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ray.
Just want you to know I do my own stunts. I don't have a body double.
That wasn't in your bio.
No, but I mean, I got about 2 more years of doing stunts. I'm getting kind of brittle.
Looking good. You're looking good. You're holding up pretty good.
You better check for cataracts.
Happens to all of us. You know, I'm thinking now in the intro I just mentioned, we go kind of back far. You might not even remember.
Well,
but
you were like one of the cool cheerleaders, and I was in the National Honor Society geeks, and you always went out with Biff and Max and I just kind of did your homework so you could go out with him?
You always use that line, but it works. It works. And, you know, it's funny because I was thinking as I was driving into the studio here for our interview that you probably don't remember this, but before I was married, I was a young girl, and I was with my mom at Little Flower Church, and you had little ones, all like ducks in a row in the pew. And I remember my mom saying, he's a doctor, and he has a new show on Catholic radio. You were just launching. And I was in radio. I was in secular radio at the time. And then years later, I came back to Cleveland. I worked in contemporary Christian radio, and we interviewed you on the program a few times. So you've been doing this a while.
I had to get the kids for a couple of reasons. One, tax deductions. I was getting killed with taxes. And also, it's a good business move. I mean, people don't, they don't want to talk to a psychologist who deals with parents if he doesn't have any kids. So I had to get a bunch
of kids. It's a good business move if they're well-behaved.
Well, I only took certain ones out in public. You can't take them all out in public.
Because you know people watch you extra close.
Oh, it's bad. I mean, if my kids act up, which they do about every 12 seconds, people think, well, I'm not going to him. He can't even handle his own kids. Let's find somebody else.
But it also keeps it real, which is nice. And you do that on your show. I mean, that's the beauty of, I think, your clinical expertise, but also your real faith and father aspect as well. So it's appreciated. And it's funny because you just filmed a new season of your TV show that will air on EWTN. And I was thinking about that too, because in one of your first seasons, I was blessed to be a guest. And I still remember that because I had the wrong color shirt on. And your makeup lady said, no, 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 you're going to be washed out on TV. I had just had a baby. And so she gave me like this sweater dress. And I realized then that I needed to confess my vanity because I was so worried I was going to look terrible. But that had to have been one or two seasons in. And you're what, like season 13 now? How many seasons?
Nine.
Okay.
Season nine. And we pixelated your face. We had to do that. You know, she insisted.
I never saw it, so I'm probably glad about that. Do you have your old shows out somewhere? Where do they go after they air?
I think EWTN has all of them, and they run them. They go back probably 2-3 seasons, and then you can get them up on their website or something like that. My mother has them all in her basement. Lots of them.
Mine too. So I want to talk about not only your upcoming season, but we'll get to some conversational questions. Listeners ask some questions, as you know they would, about children, about behavior, and I want to get to that. But while we're on the topic of your show, last year with the book Choose Hope, I had a chance to be a guest on your program. I think it's going to be airing in 2020, along with your new season. So can you give us a little sneak peek?
As far as we can tell, they will probably air them in March. And we did, how many did we do? I think 15 shows.
Wow.
We have seven of them that are called, I wanted to call them the least worst of Living Right with Dr. Ray, because we don't have any best of. But they call them Worth Another Look. So we went back and we had some of those early seasons and we mix and matched. And then I did the commentary in between. And then we did some new ones. We did eight new ones.
I love that. Any particular guests, I know they all do for different reasons, stand out, but impact you this season that you really want people to watch?
Had fun with Father Leo Padalinghug. He's the cooking chef. Mm-hmm. I had to show him a few things. I mean, he was cooking some stuff. I didn't even know what it was. But I had Spam and some Cheese Whiz. And you'd be surprised how creative you can be with Spam and Cheese Whiz.
No one is believing that. You have, like, the frame of Aaron Tippin, and you're not eating Spam. You know that.
Well, I showed him how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, too, and I had the camera on me. But I think he was jealous. I think he was, because I think that he went through all those years of culinary school, and here I am, just this rank amateur, kind of showing him up.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. And you were analyzing that. You could tell that through his behavior that he was jealous,
a little jealous.
What did you make?
I don't know.
I mean,
what
for
he
real.
Made.
I know, not the Spam.
Brooke, I'm telling you, I did.
Okay.
I had Spam.
What did he make?
I have no idea. It looked like some kind of, he threw all kinds of stuff in there. I'm thinking, what the heck is that? My Italian grandmother would have just thrown pasta in there with some lard and thrown some cheese on top of it. I don't know what he was doing, but it was pretty good.
Yeah, he is such a gift because he has that showmanship quality, but also obviously a great man of faith. And you had, I think, last year, the founder of Catholics Come Home, which was really compelling. I don't know if you remember that. And so you have a great diversity, as you always do, of guests. Anybody else that you want us to keep an eye out for in this upcoming season?
We're moving toward human interest stories.
Okay.
You know, it's easy to get experts, but we want to get folks that come in that had something happen to them. For example, in our Worth Another Look, we had a woman whose husband had a stroke when he was 33. They had just been married. She carried him on her back for over 30 years. He was paralyzed, and we asked her, why not a wheelchair? She said, well, a lot of places wheelchairs couldn't go, so he just got on my back and I carried him.
Wow.
She's in her 70s now, and I didn't mess with her. She took me out. Quick, that woman has a strong back.
Well, how do you find stories like that? People reach out to you, viewers?
I'm sitting on a plane once, and I'm writing. And you know how people want to talk to you on a plane, and you just kind of want to kill yourself. So the guy says, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm writing. What do you write? writing a book. I'm giving him four-word answers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Working on a book. Oh, yeah, what are you? Psychologist. Oh, yeah? What do you do as a psychologist? I'm thinking, oh, man, come on. It's a four-hour flight. Finally, I said something. We were talking a little bit, and the show came up. The TV show came up. He said, do you take guests? I said, yeah, we do. There's a lady in my hometown, Bertrill Merriweather. She adopts children with special needs, some of whom are terminal. Really? Where's your hometown? Canal Fulton? That's 8 miles from where I live. So that's how we got her. And usually somebody will come up and say, you know who you could get as a guest? And they'll tell me.
Yeah.
I was at a talk recently. Lady came up to me and said, you know who's sitting out there? No. A lawyer who argues pro-life issues before the Supreme Court. Really? Think you'd be interested in being a guest? He jumped on it.
Good. And those, to me, are the most compelling stories because they're not looking for anything. They're just truly living. And there's something in that sincere witness that comes through. And I think that's how the Holy Spirit works. It's always amazing to me how we're all connected and how He guides us. And, you know, you then have the gift to bring it out. But that is incredible. What a story. And that she would just be down the road all this time. You didn't even have to fly her in. Speaking of the Holy Spirit, when I shared this online, you and I sitting down, I had a lot of people coming out of the woodwork, people that I hadn't heard from in a while, and just asking, offering any questions. I have a bunch, so I know we're not going to get to them all, but do you mind? You're like, I just did my radio show.
That's a question.
I know it is. No deductible this time, but we just have a couple. And I think when I ask these, it's one of those that it speaks for a lot of people, one general question. So I'm going to jump right in here. Our mailbag, this is from Joy. She said, Dr. Ray, I would love to know why we're seeing such a rise in depression and anxiety in young children and teens. New study that came out in the state of Ohio, the number one cause of death ages 10 to, I believe, 13 or 14 is suicide in young adults here in Ohio. And you know, this is not a new question. I'm sure you're getting this a lot lately. What's your thought?
When I was a young shrink, a shrinkling, we said that suicide among 10 to 12 year olds is virtually unheard of. It just didn't happen. Well, now the suicide rate among that group, and especially the kids, the older, later teens, it's the second cause of death among the later teens, early 20s, next to accidents. Why? You can't kick God out of a culture. You can't destroy the family. You can't take care of the moral glue that once held a culture together in a pace that is mind-numbing. This is a moral freefall. And then be shocked that people are rootless and unhappy and anxiety-ridden. This is the natural byproduct of what we are creating in our society. And our society, all it does is double down on the stupidity that is now running rampant in our culture, everywhere.
So let's call it out then, because we know social fragmentation is one of those areas. I mean, we do have social, behavioral, genetic, all of the things, the breakdown of the family that you mentioned, but devices are probably something that we can point to. What about video games? Any other things that we can point to and say, yeah, that might be playing a part here?
Technology is stepping in and overwhelming parents. Even the good parents are not realizing how technology is shaping their child's soul and personality. And then they are shocked. They look at a child at age 17 and go, what the hell happened? Who is that? I didn't raise him that way. Well, you didn't, but you underestimated what did. Technology is so pervasive It is so seductive. It is so entertaining. Nothing in human history has had that kind of power to shape a person right underneath the family's nose. And I tell parents, first of all, the stupidest thing you can do as a parent, by far, dwarfs all other things. Go ahead. Give them a smartphone. There you go.
You've been preaching on that hill for decades. I mean, and when they first came out, you were one of the earliest people who said this. And because of you, my kids have been the latest in their class in each one to get one, but they do have one. And it's hard to hear that because I know you're right. So for those that say, how do we unopen Pandora's box? Do you just take it away cold turkey? There's a lot of parents who would say, well, this is how my coaches keep in contact, the school. It's where their life is. Is it possible just to remove it, and then what?
You can put phenomenal safeguards on it. You can have everything that goes through that phone be selected on yours. I don't know exactly how that's happened because I'm so technologically backward that I wore my garage door opener for 2 years so people think I'd have a pager. But that can happen. Two, flip phones. Ooh, what is that? Ooh, you have one of those? What's it do? Does it hurt you? Does it use gasoline? Kids refuse a flip phone. If they truly wanted to be in contact, if they truly said, well, that's how I talk to my friends, flip phone does that. No, they have to have the internet in their hand. So those are all cockamamie excuses, Brooke. They all are. 50% of parents have no safeguards on their phone whatsoever. Mm-hmm. None. Average age of a smartphone, 10 to 12. 10 to 12. So if your kid is 14 and doesn't have one, he's in the bottom 5%. And he looks at you like you're a Neanderthal. What are you? Quasi-Amish? Back off, Mom. Mm-hmm. You're crazy. Why did I get stuck with you? And parents can't stand up to that. They yield to the tsunami. And then it bites them. I will tell you, Brooke, I have seen very few parents who have not regretted giving their kid a smartphone. So, if you want a phone, how about a burner phone? How about something that has 20 minutes a month? There, I can get a hold of you from practice then.
Yeah.
The kids don't want it. And the fact that the kids don't want it tells you exactly what they do want.
Yeah, it's powerful, and it's in your face that we need to hear and be real about it. Jessica said, what advice do you have for helping families support loved ones with bipolar disease?
In the old days, bipolar was considered a relatively serious disease, okay? It oftentimes was accompanied by psychotic symptoms. Now what is happening is the definition of bipolar is expanding.
Well, to manic depressive, or is that the old view?
That was the old terminology, okay? Now it'd be bipolar disorder, mixed type. So if it's a serious mental illness, and I shouldn't say illness, disorder, something that has a biochemical base, then medication works wonders. And it's one of the few things that will work. People who have members in the family with that serious an illness, now keeping in mind it's overdiagnosed. There's a study come out, I think it was Harvard University, said it's 50% overdiagnosed. Mm. What is happening is we're taking anybody with mood swings and we're calling them bipolar, as opposed to a serious clinical manifestation. So recognize that the illness and the personality are intertwined. So if this is a difficult human being who has also been diagnosed bipolar, he's going to be a difficult bipolar. So you have to deal with the individual. You don't say, well, he has this disorder, so therefore there's a special way to deal with him. No, you got to deal with what he manifests.
I think, too, as you're talking about that, we look at the whole person, we treat the patient, but also families. It's a tough thing, and you hear a lot today about autonomy, and I've mentioned this on the show, done a deep dive with the bioethics, the National Catholic Bioethics Center, where we are not autonomous. Everything we do, we are connected, and you see that in families where one is sick, everybody rallies together. You see that if there's mental health issues, everybody is affected. One of the questions in addition to the bipolar is she's asking, how do we support if it is a difficult brother, sister, spouse? How do you support when you also don't want to enable at the same time? Where's that fine line? I know it's complicated and different for every family.
Sure, Brooke, I'll give you a 12-second answer on that one. You sort out. For example, I have a daughter who is diagnosed bipolar. I'm not so sure she is, but she was diagnosed that way. So my wife and I had to sort out where we were going to help her and where we weren't. If you're going to blow money, I'm not going to give you money. That's a given.
Okay.
Now, if you call and you want to talk to Daddy because you're feeling down, I might talk with you, but I'm not going to let you carry on for an hour and a half. That's not going to happen. So it's a matter of choosing the situation. What do you want to respond to? How? And you can't second guess yourself. You can't go, well, maybe I should have done this or maybe I shouldn't have done it. For heaven's sakes, we're not God. We can't decide what the perfect way to handle every situation is. And
do you realize how hard this is for women? I know you're saying that.
Oh, you want to fix it all. You want to make it all right. Make it fixed. Our Lord couldn't get most people to follow him and listen to him. Who do we think we are?
But it's the guilt, too, because you think I was hard, too hard. I wasn't hard enough. What did I do when I was pregnant? I just think it's so hard
You're
to remove that.
You're turning parenting into a formula. I didn't use the right formula, and therefore this is what happened. That's not the way it is. You're dealing with a human being. My wife always said, as our kids got older, we are raising people with unique personalities, unique impulse control, unique intellect, unique morals. You're dealing people. I got some kids probably going to serve a church. I got some probably going to serve time.
Yeah. Yep. Randy is very wise. Kelly says, okay, so that was kind of a tie-in to the other question. And this really goes back to what we were just talking about. Konya says, please ask Dr. Ray how to help our teens who are struggling with the social media bombardment. My son's classes are online, his social life, his friends. To get school information, he has to be online. Even if I take away screen access, I have to give it back for school-related work. He's sucked back in, and his phone is always calling him like a drug. Girl drama, bullying, there is no peace. I would like to ask the basics of where to start. How do you know if you should seek professional assistance? And then someone else had kind of chimed in and said they were a physician and they have hypnosis at their practice. Is something like that ever an intervention worth trying?
Hypnosis works predominantly on circumscribed problems, smoking, weight loss, pain management. In answer to this question, well, first of all, here, mom's doing what a lot of parents do. Well, gee, they need it for this and this, and therefore it's open for that. Wait a minute. You can set up times on a phone. You can get apps and certain kind of safeguards to say, okay, the phone is there from 6 to 8. That's when you do your homework. You do it in the kitchen. You don't do it in your bedroom because you'll get 27 texts. That's it. See, but parents, they kind of just sort of yield to the whole thing. It's all or nothing. Mm-hmm. Instead of simply saying, okay, you got your homework you got to do online. And you know what my wife did with my daughter when she was in school? Because she was one of the few kids in school who didn't have a smartphone. We got the messages. The coach's messages came to us.
Imagine that.
Yes, you have practice at 3:30.
Yeah. And it's interesting as you're talking about the kids, because I wonder if our parenting skills as a whole have gotten weaker.
Do I need to verbalize that?
Early on, we did the counting, and you said never do the counting. We'd say one, two. This is when they were little, and I remember you said, "No, what are you doing?"
Because I'm going to give you a certain amount of time before you decide to obey me.
Now I realize, what were we doing? But kids learn. You know they're good. They know what they can get away with. They know how they can push the buttons. They know how they can induce guilt. And so, but when I was growing up, what my dad said was what we did. No question, no lip.
You knew. Your dad had authority. I call it the perception of authority. That perception of authority, by and large, is not what it once was even a generation ago.
Is it through the breakdown of the family? Where did we lose that political correctness?
Let's take good families. Let's take good parents. Let's take parents like you, okay? Kind of people who listen to your podcast. These are folks who want to do the right thing. And as the experts have swarmed into parenting the last 30, 40 years and told them all the new psychologically enlightened ways to be a parent, they second guess themselves. They wonder if they're doing the right thing. They want to be kinder, gentler. They want to over reason. They talk way too much. So as a result, kids being kids, they push. And then we say, he's so strong-willed. He's not strong-willed. He's a kid. Okay? And then what happens is we don't have the authority. I have a little simple test I give to parents. Very simple. I call it my authority test. Can you look at that child? Let's say an 8-year-old. That's disrespectful, son. Go stand in the corner, please. Like that, calm tone of voice, what would happen? The majority of parents cannot get that child to go to that corner, stand there for his time quietly, without an argument, without coming out 26 times, without a meltdown fit, without a stare that says, who's going to put me there, you? They can't. And if you don't have authority, then pretty much everything can become a potential ugly battle.
Yeah, and it never stops. I mean, we have crossed the point of no return. And now, because people were so sensitive, and I think that that's good. I was talking to my son. We go for nightly walks, and I was sharing with him this study that we started the show with about the 10 to 13-year-old age group. And I said, why do you think that is? And he had his own hypothesis, but he said, Mom, some of the music out there is really bad, the rap music. But he said, people, they're not tough anymore. And it almost felt like he was saying something scandalous. What do you mean? But it's true.
It is true.
Because we have learned and been conditioned to be so sensitive. Even we have to do jazz hands. We can't even clap anymore because clap. I mean, and I have an autistic daughter, so I know that noise affects her. But you see these conventions. It's a real thing where they're just kind of doing because clapping might offend someone. How is this real life?
This is the natural byproduct of the onslaught of the shrinks who have dealt so much in feelings, who have dealt so much in self. We've become a very self-society. Mm-hmm. So therefore, anything that would remotely be uncomfortable for me, well, I shouldn't have to deal with it. And you should have to change your conduct because I might find that unpleasant. That's what we've become. It's my three-year-old personality assessment. We've become three-year-olds.
So how do we walk it back? And I think it naturally takes us into the transgender tyranny. Really, I feel that that's what's happening with this movement. And this is a tough thing because we know here we have to start right at the base again. We have to assume when you say that someone's thinking that I'm not acting out of charity or that I'm making a judgment. And the truth is I shouldn't have to say, I love this person as my brother and sister in Christ. But if they are in a miniskirt as a male reading to my child and trying to push their drag queen agenda, whatever the case might be, this is morally wrong. It's coming into schools. It's coming into libraries. We're not able to speak. What is the recourse for the Christian parent who has a problem with this?
Maybe it's because I'm getting older, and there's a certain component of I don't care invulnerability. I'm not going to be bullied. I am not going to be bullied. I'm allowed to have the moral system that I wish. I'm allowed to view life the way I wish. You are not going to shape me or bully me into thinking and acting like you. And we need more people to stand up and say, that's it. Enough.
But our culture has gotten so bad, people don't even want to go into the fray. They don't even want to open their mouth. They're afraid they might lose their job. They might be, a memo might be sent to their boss. If they're a teacher, they can't speak up. If they work in corporate America, you know, they could lose their job. If they're in the church, this is the challenge. It's almost like we're going underground, and yet we can't do that. You see, and we've talked about this on the show as well, the culture of death is weak. It looks like this giant menacing figure, but it's really weak. But I think we need to be reminded of the importance of defending Christ's teaching. But there's so much confusion, and I think even in the Christian community right now, that I think people just are quiet. They don't know what to say.
Saw a survey, and they asked him, if you were to vote for this person, would you let anybody know it? Half of them said, no, I wouldn't let them know it. We've been bullied. We've been bullied into submission. We've been bullied into silence. And the irony is, the way that people think traditionally is probably still in the majority. It probably still is the dominant thinking in this culture. But because the opinion shapers have convinced so many people that this is the new way of running a society now. I don't know, Book, if it's going to turn around. All I do believe is that we're going to segment up, and there will be those people who cling to traditional morals and values, and they will be, in essence, subcultural pockets within the society.
Okay. Well, this is what we signed up for, though. I mean, as Christians, we know that, Jesus said, take your cross and carry me. And in every culture, we know it's going to look different. We don't know what that's going to look like. And this is the here and now. So for me as mom, my takeaway is if I say to my son, he needs to stand in the corner, he's going to go. And also, the removal of the cell phones. That's a tough thing. Where do we start with that? Just one day make an announcement? Do we use lecture? What do you suggest?
You're not going to convince a child. That's their third kidney. They will think you've destroyed their lives. I've never seen children react as violently to any discipline as I have them taking a cell phone, a parent taking a cell phone. So given that, here's the decision. The parent says, do I like the direction of my child's personality? Do I like the direction of my child's time? Do I like the direction of my child's attitude? Do I like the direction of my child's early sexuality because of this thing? And if you don't, then you decide. You make a decision on how you're going to handle it. You know what typically happens, Brooke? A kid will misuse the phone. Pornography's huge among adolescent boys. Vast majority. They'll misuse the phone. The parent will discover it. How long, Dr. Ray, do you think I should take the phone? That's not the question. The question is, should he have had the phone in the first place?
Okay, and we need to hear that. You know, that's important stuff. Thank you. I always want to call you Father Ray. Thank you, Dr. Ray.
Poor Damie, that quick? Poor priests have to go through, what, 9, 10 years? Me?
Well, you are
six
a father.
6 seconds.
Thank you, Dr. Ray. Do you have anything new coming down the pike? We know your show,
yes.
So we'll be looking forward to that. What else?
I got a book coming out in the fall that's called They said it's coming out in January. Raising Upright Children in an Upside Down World, Defying the Anti-Parent Culture, Dealing with All This Technology Stuff.
Wow. Okay, right on cue. God bless you. Thank you so much. How can we find you? DrRay.com?
DrRay.com.
We'll do it. Thank you.
Okay, power-packed interview right there. He does not hold back. What do you think? I would love to know your input on this. You can leave a comment on the Facebook page. Email me, feedback@goodthingsradio.com. That's a quick, easy way to reach out. Even Voxer, send me an audio message. Easy to do. Brooke Taylor and the number one is how you can find me on Voxer. And honestly, I think the timing of this is good as we remember the model for all of our families, and that is the Holy Family, and place our hopes, our hearts, our hurts, all the needs of healing into that manger where the hope for the broken world was born and the reason for our hope. Thank you again to Dr. Ray. Thank you for being a part of the show. Until next time, friends, God bless you. Peace and love.
Good Things Radio is a production of St. Gabriel Media. Adventure, encounter, evangelize. To find out more or to schedule Brooke to speak to your group or parish, visit brooketaylor.us. That's brooketaylor.us. Good Things Radio is a production of Coming Home Studios, produced by Mark Cumming. Find out more at www.cominghomestudio.com.